Could new trade agreements with Britain help India better battle future health crises? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The official number of COVID-19 cases in India has now tapped 20 million. As infection rates continue to climb, there are still reports of oxygen shortages in the nation's capital, despite a midnight Supreme Court deadline for the government to shore up supplies. Several Indian states have imposed their own movement restrictions, but Prime Minister Narendra Modi has been reluctant to implement a national lockdown over concerns about creating even more damage to the country's economy. As India continues to battle through a violent second wave of the pandemic, today it's agreed new investment deals with the UK to, as Prime Minister Boris Johnson put it, make the two nations' populations stronger and safer. Part of the $1.3 billion deals include investments by India's Serum Institute to support clinical trials, research, and potentially vaccine manufacturing. The BBC's Nikhil Anamdar explains how these deals could help India better prepare for the next crisis.
We have seen the UK, for instance, send aid in excess of £6 million just last week, and all eyes on whether some of that could be enhanced going forward. Many people saying this is really a precursor to a more comprehensive free trade agreement, which would effectively reduce some of the tariff and non-tariff barriers that have been hindering the trading relationship between the UK and India.
These trade deals create 6,000 jobs here in the UK across industries, including health and technology. And as you say, the goal is to ideally turn these individual deals into a full-fledged free trade agreement that would double bilateral trade between the two countries. How does India specifically benefit from an arrangement like that?
We are looking at things such as reciprocal access and deeper cooperation in areas such as visas, for instance, or education, migration, and return for the UK government seeking more access to India's financial services, and also defence and security in the Indo-Pacific region. The emphasis, I think, in the UK, especially in the post-Brexit world, really is on trade. But for India, I guess it's a more sort of wider spectrum of issues that we're looking at.
Now, the European Union, Australia, New Zealand, they've all tried to strike their own free trade deals with India, but those have stalled so far. Obviously, the country, just like many others, is grappling with the economic fallout from the pandemic. Does that make it more likely that the UK and India can strike a free trade deal together?
So I don't think a free trade deal is something that will be likely in the immediate term. I mean, even if you've spoken to government officials from both the UK and India, they don't commit to a free trade deal coming out anytime in the next 2 or 3 years, in fact. I think it's something that they're looking at over the medium term. But right now, I think what this enhanced trade partnership does is take us one step closer to it. It's being seen as a precursor to a free trade agreement, which would be an eventuality, I guess. It's very difficult in countries such as India to get these trade deals moving swiftly. More recently, as you said, you know, given the problems with the economy and so on and so forth, we have seen the government get more protectionist. And I guess there's a lot of bargaining in to and fro before we can actually arrive at a free trade agreement.
The BBC's Nikhil Anamdar for us. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers now, India's benchmark share index in Mumbai has eased off its lows of the day to trade mostly flat. That's amid a broader decline across Asia. Here in Europe, British stocks have reopened from holiday and are trading 0.5% higher. After a year of Zoom meetings, foreign ministers from the G7 group of so-called advanced economies are meeting in person here in London today. The BBC's James Landale explains what's on the agenda.
Lancaster House in central London has played host to many historic negotiations, but rarely will it have seen such diplomatic speed dating as today. Foreign ministers from the G7, that's Britain, the US, Canada, France, Germany, Italy and Japan, will be joined by counterparts from Australia, South Korea, South Africa, Brunei and the EU. And for the next few days, they will scurry round the clock from meeting to meeting, doing as much business face-to-face as they can. Today, they'll discuss the world's big geopolitical issues, from China to Myanmar, Ethiopia to Ukraine, Syria to the Sahel. The underlying theme will be how they can best organise to defend international rules and open societies against the threat of autocratic regimes.
Well, as James Landale reported there, ministers are expected to discuss a range of global developments, including February's military coup in Myanmar. Britain's foreign secretary is expected to urge his counterparts to take stronger action against the takeover, which is turning into a broader public health crisis. The BBC's Nick Marsh has more on that story.
Mo is 53 years old. She lives in Mandalay in northern Myanmar, and she has stage 3 breast cancer. I'm not using her real name, and you won't hear her real voice. Before the military takeover, she used to go for radiotherapy every 3 weeks at the state-run Mandalay General Hospital. Now, that hospital is empty.
If I want to complete my treatment, I would have to go to a private hospital. But I don't have the money to afford this.
She'd need about $700 to finish her life-saving cycles of treatment. A doctor I spoke to believes she has around a year to live without it. The doctors who'd normally be treating her refuse to come back until the elected government is restored. The Burmese security forces have killed more than 700 people since the army seized power from Aung San Suu Kyi's government 3 months ago. A mass civil disobedience movement was the response, spearheaded by thousands of doctors across the country. Overnight, Myanmar's public healthcare system virtually vanished. Joy Singhal is the Myanmar head of delegation for the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies.
Primary healthcare is the backbone of any proper society, and right now that has crashed.
It's thought around 80% of Myanmar's hospitals and medical clinics are state-run. But now the vast majority are closed or occupied by soldiers running bare-bone operations. It's an unthinkable scenario for many countries, especially in the middle of a pandemic. The military junta is now putting the pressure on doctors to return to work.
We will not do that, you know.
This is Chi Chi, again, not her real name. She's a doctor in Mandalay who's been on strike since February. We've used an actor to voice what she told me.
For as long as the military junta stays in power, I will not return to work. We know if we join the protests, they will shoot us. So this is the only thing we can do.
For now, an awkward patchwork of NGOs, private hospitals and pharmaceutical companies are trying to plug the gaps. But those on the ground say it's a drop in the ocean. Eventually, the money will run out. Throw in daily mass gatherings and displacement of people, and experts say it's not a question of if, but when a major outbreak occurs.
That's the BBC's Nick Marsh following developments out of Myanmar there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.